Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Anybody who uses Twitter or Facebook knows this. People like to share. Perhaps more so now than ever before. They share what they had for dinner, what song they have stuck in their head, how wet they got walking into work this morning.
You know who we're talking about out there. You know you do. And it all sounds a bit like TMI to me, but it turns out there may be a reason for that. According to new research from the Social, Cognitive, and Affective Neuroscience Lab at Harvard University, that kind of sharing may give our brains a neurochemical boost. The research was led by Harvard psychology graduate student Diana Tamir, who joins us now from the campus in Cambridge. Diana Tamir, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi.
So the title of your paper, which was published recently in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, is Disclosing Information About the Self is Intrinsically Rewarding. So I want to talk to you in a minute about how or why it might be intrinsically rewarding. But first of all, just tell me, what was your inspiration behind asking this question? Is there a biology or a biological reason for why we share about ourselves?
Sure. Well, we see all the time when we talk with people in real life and when we go to Facebook or Twitter that people like to talk about themselves, and they do it all the time. And we were curious why people did that. So we wanted to test whether or not people did it maybe because it was rewarding or it felt good to do so.
Okay, so take us into the lab. How exactly did you discern that there may be some intrinsic biological reward going on here? What was your experiment?
Well, we ran a few experiments. One of the experiments was trying to measure whether or not people found self-disclosure rewarding by seeing whether or not they were willing to pay to do so. So we had people, we gave people the opportunity to do a few tasks, and we wanted to see the ways in which they would pay money or trade off money or forego money in order to engage in different tasks. And it turns out that self-disclosure was the task that they were willing to forego the most money in order to do.
Oh, I see. So basically you offered them a sum of money, pennies, dollars, I don't know.
And pennies.
Okay. And they said, and you found that people basically said the value, the intrinsic value I feel of when I talk about myself is worth 4 cents, and that's how much I'm willing to give up. Whereas if I'm talking about someone else, you got to give me money?
Yeah, we can measure the relative reward of one of those tasks to the other, and it turns out the self-disclosure is worth about a penny more than doing nothing.
Okay, great. So that was one of the tests, but you also used functional MRI and measured what actual brain activity was telling you, didn't you?
Right. So another way that we can measure whether or not someone experiences subjective reward from doing something is by seeing whether or not they recruit neural regions that are responsive to the receipt of reward. And so we had people in an fMRI scanner doing tasks in which they're allowed to answer questions about themselves and share those answers with a friend. And it turns out that when people are answering questions about themselves and sharing those answers with a friend, they recruit these neural regions that are responsive to reward more so than when they're not answering questions about themselves or when they don't have the opportunity to share that information with a friend.
Okay, so this research is actually really interesting, so I want to walk through it a little slowly. Because
okay.
From what I've read, you basically said that there are you set up a lab situation in which there were four types of sharing, right? So someone could talk about themselves while they were getting an MRI scan. And so they could talk about themselves and share it or think they were sharing it with someone. They mm-hmm. could talk about themselves and not think they were sharing it with someone. They could talk about somebody else and be sharing it, or they could talk about someone else and not be sharing it, right? Are those the four sort of categories?
Yep, that's right.
Okay. And you found, I guess what did you sort of hinted at it a little earlier, but you found that whether or not someone was sharing it publicly or privately, talking about yourself actually generated more biological activity than talking about someone else?
Yeah, we found that both aspects of self-disclosure end up being rewarding. So there's the self part. People like to think about themselves and they like to share information about themselves. And there's also the disclosure part. So people like to share information, both self and otherwise, to other people.
Okay, and so I guess what I'm trying to fully understand is, do you have a sense as to what part of the brain then was driving or reacting most strongly to this idea of sharing about yourself?
Yeah, so the regions that we were interested in are part of the mesolimbic dopamine system, which includes the nucleus accumbens and the ventral tegmental area. And a long line of research in neuroscience has associated those regions with the processing of reward. And those are the same regions that we found to be responsive when people were self-disclosing in the scanner.
Associated with reward. So this is an area of the brain that has had a lot of, as you were just saying, a lot of focus on it recently. Because of issues of such as like biological reasons for, let's say, addiction or gambling addiction comes up, because there's an idea of getting constant feedback and reward gives you, in layman's terms, a bit of a dopamine squirt that comes from this brain and that lights up a neurochemical activity?
Yeah, I guess a dopamine squirt is a good layman's way of
two layman's
putting
term.
That.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm just, is this the same part of the brain that people are looking at?
Yeah, this part of the brain is involved in all sorts of types of reward and motivation and the learning of reward value for various things in the world. And so, yeah, its involvement in self-disclosure suggests that this behavior as well is rewarding.
Okay, so listeners, we've just walked through a little bit of a lab experiment, well, a major lab experiment, actually, that was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences that suggests that there's an intrinsic reward to talking about yourself. So does this sound like you? I mean, do you actually feel different or maybe even better when you've talked about yourself, whether it's to a friend or perhaps maybe just to yourself or even on social media? And speaking of social media, does it now make more sense to you about the explosive growth of platforms like Facebook or Twitter or Google? Or does it make you think that maybe now these companies are profiting from a biological urge that we just can't help ourselves? I'm joined by Diana Tamir. She's a graduate student in psychology at Harvard, and she published this recent paper. And if you've got a thought on this, give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We welcome you if you can't help but talk about yourselves. This is the perfect segment for you, 800-423-8255. Diana Tamir, let me ask you, you make a point in the paper that I found quite surprising, that based on your studies, that you found an actual location in the brain that was showing response to when people were sharing about themselves, whether or not it was public or private, that made you think that self-reflection or self-sharing is as intrinsically valued to a human organism in the same way as food and sex, that it's a primary reward. I mean, do you really feel that?
Well, these mesolimbic dopamine system regions, they respond to primary rewards, they respond to secondary rewards, they respond to social rewards. So they respond to all sorts of things that are that have value. In addition, they respond to things that don't have value, which is why we wanted to run a behavioral study as well.
And so you tell me a little bit more about that, though.
About the neuroimaging study?
Yeah. I mean, because I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, you're starting to draw a bridge between just the act of talking and the fact that it's a fundamental importance, perhaps even evolutionary importance to human beings.
Sure. People are inherently social creatures. I mean, we interact with other humans all the time. And I think sharing about yourself is just one of those ways in which we try to connect with other people. People also find it valuable to solicit information from other people. We like the back and forth, the reciprocity of sharing information and getting information. And, you know, previous research has shown that the more you share about yourself, the more people like you, the more you like the person that you've shared to. So it seems to this reward activity seems to underlie something that makes us the kinds of social creatures that we are.
Mm. So you're a graduate student in psychology. Now that you've sort of started to unlock this intrinsic reward system behind talking about ourselves, what does that make you think of? Social media, that seems to be like one of the most popular modern day manifestations of the fact that people just love to put information out there.
Yeah, I think this helps to explain the popularity of Twitter. Twitter probably wouldn't exist if people didn't enjoy sharing information with other people so much.
Oh, well, in your study, actually, let me back up, because there's one thing I should have asked a little earlier. So when you were talking, when you were getting people to talk about themselves, whether it be to someone that they thought they were sharing it to or just privately, what between those two gave folks the greater reward?
So sharing with other people about yourself produces more reward than just thinking about yourself. But there is some value to just doing anything that's self-referential, whether it's just thinking about yourself or whether you're sending those thoughts over to an audience.
Oh, interesting. So it actually does still matter that we think someone is listening.
It does, yeah.
Okay, well, we've got some callers who want to join us. And again, we're at 1-800-423-8255. This is the time that you can share about yourself and why you think you do that. Diana Tamir is my guest. She's a graduate student in psychology at Harvard. She has published a paper in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences that found that there may be an intrinsic biological reason why we are compelled to talk about ourselves. Rebecca is calling from Chelmsford. You're on the air, Rebecca.
Hi. Yes, I was just going to say that I absolutely love to talk about myself, especially when I am meeting new people for the first time. But I find myself quite self-conscious of how much I'm talking about myself, because I don't want to come off as conceited or self-absorbed. So I was wondering if that ever came up in any of the studies that you guys did. And I'll take my answer off here.
Rebecca, thank you so much for your call. So, Diana Tamir, what did you have people actually share when they were getting the fMRI scan? And did you find what Rebecca asked, that content matters?
So we had people share relatively banal aspects of themselves. So things like whether or not they preferred to drink coffee or tea, or whether or not they enjoyed walking around a bookstore, nothing that was super salient or super emotional. And even with those really banal statements, people seem to experience reward. But we don't know. I imagine that the amount of value that you get from sharing information will change depending on the type of thing that you're sharing. Also, in our studies, people were always sharing in one direction. People never got to receive information from another person. But we know from previous research that that one-sided disclosure is not as rewarding as or is not as productive as two-sided disclosure, where there's reciprocity between the two parties involved.
Hmm. Daniel is calling from Somerville. You're on the air, Daniel.
Okay, so my question is, I have a brother who doesn't share anything at all. You just cannot get anything out of him, and I'm the type of person who would talk about anything and everything. So do you see any genetic differences between based on how much they share? I mean, is it a futuristic kind of research that I'm going to look at? Some people like it. Some people just don't say anything at all.
Daniel, thank you so much for your call. Diana Tamir, any stab at that answer?
Yeah, we definitely haven't looked at the genetics behind this, but we were interested in seeing whether there were certain personality types that were more likely to share or less likely to share, or whether the value changed depending on what type of personality you are. And we didn't find that, say, introverted people enjoyed sharing less or extroverted people enjoyed sharing more. So we don't really know what causes some people to share a lot and causes other people to share just a little. But I imagine that even really shy people probably like having an audience for their thoughts. Maybe they're just less good at seeking those out.
Let's take another call from Bill, who's calling from Lowell. You're on the air, Bill.
Hi. First of all, Meghna, I think you have the nicest voice on the radio. However, my point is that I have been seeing a social worker and paying that social worker good money for 20 to 25 years now. And it's helped my mental health tremendously. Now, of course, I'm seeing a professional and so that makes a big difference there. But the thought that I had, and I'd be interested to hear your comments on it, is that I think sharing about ourselves, talking about ourselves, is good for our mental health. And that's my comment.
Bill, first of all, thank you for the compliment. You can't see this, but I am blushing. I am humbled. Thank you for your compliment. But also, Diana Tamir, Bill brings up a really interesting point that I have actually been thinking about all day long, because there are so many aspects of life, you know, going to see a social worker or a therapist, going to confession, you know, having a close circle of friends with whom you feel like you can share your deepest secrets, that, you know, you can see that we actually are building in these systems of safe spaces for disclosure. I mean, so do you have a sense as to how much that is actually continuing to reinforce this intrinsic reward system now that you're uncovering in the brain?
Yeah, I think no matter who you're sharing to, whether or not it's you know, a talk therapist or your friend or the worldwide internet or God, whether you're praying to God, I think all those types of disclosure are rewarding for the reasons that the listener just brought up, and that it feels good to get things off your chest and to say what you're thinking and feeling. There was a neuroimaging study a few years back that looked at whether or not people had neural activity associated with reward when they prayed to God, and they showed that they did. I think that's maybe one example of how self-disclosure, kind of regardless of who the target is rewarding.
Ben is calling from Wakefield. You're on the air, Ben.
Hi. Yes. Thanks. Good discussion. And I guess my point was just that I think it matters to probably, I represent the introvert crowd, you know, whether there is intimacy with the person that you're disclosing with, and somebody that knows and cares about you. Now, somebody just mentioned God, so I think that could that could probably qualify for some people would feel, you know, intimate. And maybe some people might feel an intimacy with, you know, with a stranger that they just met on a airplane. But I would wonder if, you know, in the study that you conducted, you know, measuring gratification through the way you describe with the pennies and so forth, if that takes into consideration that element of intimacy.
Ben, thank you so much for your call. That actually leads us to the last couple seconds we have, Diana Tamir. What is the next step for you in terms of this research?
In terms of this research, we're looking into exploring more the social consequences of self-disclosure behavior. So looking at how it changes the way that you think about the person that you're talking to, how it changes the way that you're you treat them. We're also interested in non-egocentric forms of self-disclosure. So why do we just share any type of information with other people? Will we do that altruistically, even though it has nothing to do with ourselves?
Well, it sounds fascinating. We look forward to seeing that research. Diana Tamir is a graduate student of psychology at Harvard. She's published a paper in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences saying there's a biological reason why we just can't help ourselves when it comes to talking. Diana Tamir, thank you so much.
My pleasure.